This is Locked On Eagles. What's going on, everybody? Louis DiBiase joining you on this Monday edition of the show alongside my co-host Gino Camilleri joining me today as we recap. We take a look back at, Gino, I think the right word would be chaos in Atlanta last night in the Sunday Night Football battle between the Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons. The Eagles fall in a heartbreaking nail-biter, 24-20, right? I think chaos is the right word.
Just nothing made sense. It was just like a bunch of darts were thrown at the wall, and they all hit in random different areas with outcomes that nobody could have foreseen happening going into yesterday's game. And I think chaos is the only way to describe yesterday's game. And just like chaos would have, people are still shook up from it the next day. And I think we're going to be shook up about this loss for quite some time.
This lead story today for Locked On Eagles is brought to you by Peloton. Can't find a workout that keeps you engaged? Peloton is an immersive cardio experience with real-time features that will always keep you coming back. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike and get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON to get started. So right here on Locked On Eagles on this Monday edition of the show, once again, we're getting into the 24-20 loss last night. I would call it the most intense, motivated when it comes to the Atlanta Falcons and Carson Wentz, the most intense, motivated, unlucky when it comes to health, bloodbath, street fight that I have seen, Gino, in a long time. And you talked about it before the show. These week two games with the Eagles just continue to leave fans just going nuts the past 3 years. You look at the Kansas City Chiefs in 2017, Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, and now this battle against the Falcons, man. It's just these week two battles, they just can't get it right.
Yeah, I tweeted it out yesterday, and I've got like 160 retweets and like 700 something likes on it. My phone is just blowing up with all these people. I literally was just stating a fact, which is funny because like the most simple minded tweet that I've like put no thought into. It's one of those weird things. It's like they come in hot, understand their game plan week one, they're great planning for a couple weeks out, and then they just like hit week two and they just forget how to play call on both sides of the ball. They forget how to execute their plays. People are forgetting how to run routes. The injuries are just running rampant. It just, what happened yesterday is inexplicable. Like, there's no way to put it into words, that series of events that all of us Eagles fans went through over a course of 3 hours yesterday.
Well, and the biggest unexplainable thing of that game were the injuries. I have never seen anything like that. And we saw last year with the cornerbacks, the defensive tackles, right? Timmy Jernigan getting hurt. I mean, there was Rodney McLeod got injured. On the offensive side of the ball, people were banged up. They had to bring in Jordan Matthews because Alshon Jeffrey was hurt and Mike Wallace was hurt. So we did see a ton of injuries in 2018, but in one game, so quickly, immediately from the get-go of this game, injuries were flying to key players, right? We saw Dallas Goedert, DeSean Jackson, Alshon Jeffrey, Nelson Aguilar at one point, Jason Kelsey, Carson Wentz, Timmy Jernigan, and Sidney Jones. They were all in the blue tent at one point, to the extent of people are now calling this the blue tent game because the Eagles suffered so many injuries in one game. I've never seen anything like it. I think it's the biggest story, and also because it affects the long-term goal. I think the only way that this 2019 season could have been derailed, Gino, was by injuries because of how talented they are, and it certainly was the thing that held them back on Sunday night.
It's the one trend that we talked about in length before this season began, and we even had like an entire podcast about things we don't want to return for 2019.
That's right,
and one
yeah.
of those was injuries, and here we are again. Like, we're down to Hassan Ridgeway being our defensive tackle number two with Tim Jernigan, who fortunately is not out for the entire season, which the first report that came out said he was. It's still 4 to 6 weeks, but man, we're talking about all this depth that we had, and it's just depleted once again. It feels like that New Orleans game last season, although it was a competitive game, but still, just injury wise one after another, it's like Sidney Jones comes out, makes this unbelievable hit on a tight end, becomes a willing and able tackler for the first time in his career, looks like he put on a little bit of weight, and then he's off the field. I was looking at my girlfriend or my fiance yesterday saying, where the hell is Alshon Jeffrey? Matter of fact, he wasn't even on the field. He was on the field for six plays. It was just one after another, and it all started with that bad omen that I think either Dave Zingaro or one of those guys at NBC Philly tweeted out before the game of Dallas Goedert walking to the locker room before the game even started. And when I saw that, I already had a bad inclination about this game just with the trend of week twos, Atlanta at home coming off a bad defeat. We always play Atlanta tough. It was just one of those things. I just didn't have a good gut feeling going into the game. And then as soon as I saw that video, I go, yeah, this is probably going to be one of those nights that we're going to want to forget. And sure enough, it absolutely was.
It really was like that Saints game last year. It reminded me of a lot of games last year where they're just so they're banged up, and it's there's almost nothing you can do. You just have to sit back and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. I think a good one, too, is the Giants game where they erased a 16-point lead from the Giants, but they were doing it with the likes of Chandon Sullivan at cornerback, right, and Devontae Bosby. And a lot of the guys didn't come back yesterday. Yeah, you got Sidney Jones back. You did get Carson Wentz coming back, thank God. You know, he got beat up yesterday, Gino. I don't think I've ever seen him take such a beating. And he comes back, so yeah, you got him, Kelsey, Sidney Jones, but DeSean Jackson did not come back. Alshon Jeffrey, like you said, played a couple snaps, and he was out for the game. Dallas Goedert never played. Timmy Jernigan did not return, and like you said, he's the one guy we know a clear timetable of 4 to 6 weeks right now. DeSean Jackson was walking around practice today. They said the limp wasn't as noticeable, so hopefully it's not that serious. I'm really hoping Alshon and Jackson specifically, because those two are two of the biggest pieces of this team. But yeah, it was just, it's something that, I mean, we've seen it before, but it's like, you shouldn't see that all happen in one game. And I think, I mean, when we talk about the slow starts in the first quarter, I think the injuries were the biggest one yesterday, because Doug Peterson talked about it after the game, how he really wanted to go 12 personnel centric early on in that one. And they really couldn't do that. They lost their two top receivers, so they almost had to throw everything out the window and start from scratch. Not to mention the offensive line really struggled, which is why Carson Wentz ended up getting hurt, because he took a beating.
Yeah, you look at it in the sense that a coordinator, i.e. Doug Peterson in this situation, scripts out between probably, let's say, 12 to the first 20 plays of a game. So, going into that game, you've already had that scripted out, probably around Thursday or Friday. You got it all settled. You went through your walkthrough Saturday. Before the game even starts, you're having to change your game plan now that Dallas Goedert's out. A couple snaps in, your number one receiver and Alshon Jeffrey's out. A couple snaps later, now DeSean Jackson's out. Now you're down to one active tight end, because they did not sign a third tight end after they let Alex Ellis go back onto the practice squad. So now you're sitting there with Zach Ertz, who must play every single snap from there on out. Your two top wide receivers are out, and you have now Nelson Agholor, who has been known that he cannot assume the outside receiver position. He is now stuck in the slot with Mac Hollins, who before this preseason began, we had question marks even if he was going to be able to suit up for the season, and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who didn't have much time with Carson Wentz at all. So now your entire offensive game plan is just ripped to shreds before you're two series into the game, and that absolutely was a hurdle for Doug Peterson to overcome. He said it in his press conference today, and you could see the look on his face when he was asked that question. He's like, it absolutely threw it off. Like, there's no way to go about it and say that it wasn't, because Atlanta has a good defense. It's a tough cover three defense to unfold, and the way to win that is on those timing routes and winning in matchups, and you saw that as soon as J.J. Arcega-Whiteside had to be responsible for a timing route from Carson Wentz. He just couldn't get the route. And because you don't have that understanding with your fourth and fifth receiver that you do with Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson. It's just one of those things that, yes, we can't make injuries an excuse, because Atlanta was in this exact situation this time a year ago against us. That first game, they had guys go down left and right, so I'm not going to use that as an excuse. But it's not great when you have a very, very motivated Atlanta team that just had one goal to win that game last night, and they were definitely hungrier by the way they came out. And there were not a lot of Eagles that played up to yesterday's game, but there were still a couple bright spots that we can get to in this game. But overall, it was just, like you said, Lou, I think this is the chaos game, the blue tent game, the Ronald Darby game, the missed Agholor dropped game, whatever you want to call it. This game has a lot of names, all not in a great sense.
Yeah, we will get into more of the ending. We'll get into some individual performances, some of the positives, because there were some positives to take away from this loss. But just to kind of wrap up this first segment here and talking about those slow starts, everybody keeps pointing to them. But for me, Gino, it's like there's no just one quick fix, right? You can't just figure out one thing, like, this is what we're going to do, and that's how we're going to fix it. I mean, it's something different every single week, and this week it was injuries, and also, I mean, the offensive line. I mean, hats off to the Falcons' defensive front. When you look at Grady Jarrett and Tack McKinley and, you know,
baller,
Vic Beasley,
dude.
Those guys, I mean, Isaac Samalu had the roughest game of his career, and even, like, Jason Peters.
Grady Jarrett is damn good.
Oh,
like,
for
he's
sure.
He's one of the most underrated defensive tackles in the league, and I think I've made it known where I stand on Grady Jarrett for quite some time. But, yeah, you're right. Samalu, that entire offensive line, whew, man, we're going to go up against some better defensive fronts. They got to play better than what they did yesterday, or Carson Wentz is going to be the walking wounded again.
Well, and that's what kind of threw it off from the get-go, is Wentz was just taking this absolute beating, and he really didn't have time to find, like you said, these newer receivers that needed more time to get open down the field, and Arthego Whiteside and Mac Hollins. So, I mean, that's the thing.
They were needing time even getting set up for the play. They were saying that Zach Ertz and Nelson Agholor were out there instructing Hollins and Arthego Whiteside where to go because they never even ran through those plays. They didn't get
well because they weren't even part of
the
plan. Yeah, they weren't part of the game plan at all this week. So yeah, Ertz and Aguilar kind of had to play coach a lot of time. It was down to like 2 seconds left on the play clock, and Wentz had to literally wait to make sure that Mac Hollins was in the right spot because I mean, there's more that goes into it than just running one route when it comes to a wide receiver. It's not that simple. So that's the thing too with these slow starts is. It's something different every time. And I do like what the plan was going in, using 12 personnel. I like to point to last year, week 3 against the Indianapolis Colts. I thought the use of tempo and the use of an overemphasis on tight ends early on, getting the ball out quick, letting those guys work in space, was a good strategy. And I think that could have been the plan for Peterson today, yesterday. But yeah, like you said at the press conference, it was almost like he was just kind of throwing his hands up in the air. And he's like, I mean, what can you do when you lose three of the biggest pieces of your offense. So, I mean, it was brutal. That game from the get-go was stressful, Gino. Like, that was just intense. I'm kind of glad we're doing the show today because there's just so much that happened. You got to just take a step back and be like, I mean, because even the Eagles getting back into the football game, I don't think anybody really expected that because of all the injuries. But we'll get into that, how the Eagles got back into this game, because there was a point in the fourth quarter, the Eagles were leading 20-17 despite it's seeming like this game was out of reach from the start. So we'll get into that coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. And guys, we are sponsored today by Vivid Seats. We all love a night out, whether it's seeing our favorite band in person or being there in the crowd to cheer on our favorite team. With the Vivid Seats Rewards loyalty program, you can attend the concert or show of your choice and earn credits towards your next live event. Vivid Seats is the top source for tickets for all the live events you want to go to. You can sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice, all in the Vivid Seats app. To make things even better, Vivid Seats now has a loyalty program that allows fans to earn credit back. Vivid Seats rewards for the month of August earn double credit back from 10-16% on all your purchases through the app. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app today. Fans are automatically enrolled in the rewards loyalty program. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee, from the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater shows and more. Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and join the rewards loyalty program today. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. That's again promo code KICKOFF. We thank Vivid Seats for sponsoring Locked On Eagles today. All right, everybody, we are back recapping the 24-20 Sunday Night Football loss by the hands of the Atlanta Falcons for the Philadelphia Eagles. And, Gino, let's get into this finish here. And I want to start with a positive, and that was Carson Wentz. He ends up 25 of 43, 231 yards, only averaged 5.4 yards per completion, one touchdown, two picks. He took three sacks, only a 45.1 QBR. So if you look at the stats, and this is why you don't box score scout, you would say Carson Wentz had a terrible game. And yes, he did have a brutal first half. A lot of it had to do with him getting banged up. A lot of it had to do with brand new wide receivers he had to throw to. But I've never been more impressed in a game of Carson Wentz's career than I was last night. This is right up there with that Rams game of 2017, where just the moment, a big-time moment, he stepped up and it seemed like he was willing this team to what could have been an eventual win. He ended up putting them in place to grab a 20-17 lead off of some of the most miraculous throws I've seen. That knee throw, he had about a half a centimeter before he hit that ground, you know, and he found a way on third down to get that ball to Mac Hollins. And then the QB sneak to take the lead. The last the last drive. I mean, Aguilar drops that ball. If not, that's a game-winning touchdown throw from Wentz. The 4th and 14, where he just hurls it up to the heavens, and Nelson Aguilar comes down with it. I was over the moon by Carson Wentz's performance. I thought this was a moment that he realized that he hasn't been in the past couple years because of injuries, and he was motivated to show everybody that he can do it just like Nick Foles did. And just because of a loss, that to me doesn't discount that this guy is a clutch quarterback, and I really wish they could have got this win for him, because this would have been, I think, the staple win of his career on primetime football on the road in the most intense environment he's ever been in.
True or false, Carson Wentz did enough for the Philadelphia Eagles to win that game yesterday?
I think he did more than enough to win that football game.
Without a doubt. And we always talk about this idea that you have three types of players: one you win in spite of, one you win with, and one you win because of. If there was ever an example of winning a game because of an individual player, yesterday was the perfect example of that.
100%.
When the team was down and out and nothing was going right for them, he willed them back to victory. And I think this was like the ultimate culmination of the past couple years, because I think I'm going to go through like the time period and three games, one from each year from 16 on, and just how they made me look at Carson Wentz. The first game being that Detroit game when they're 3-0 in 2016. It's a young team, bad wide receivers. They have a chance to win the game. There's a minute 40 something left on the clock. Carson Wentz just throws up a duck. After that game, I said, he's a young quarterback, he's going to grow from this. The next year, 2017, and it's like, man, this game is not going well. Things aren't going great for us. The Seahawks game on
right.
Sunday Night Football, when nothing's going right for them. They're not in a position to win any. This game is just over with by all rights. Carson Wentz just goes out, makes another unbelievable throw that leaves Chris Collinsworth completely in awe, leaves us all in awe. And it's like, man, now he's starting to figure it out. Now he's starting to get this, quote, clutch gene in him, this winning drive. And then you look at last year, and it's like he's so close in many of these games, these fourth quarter games. He finally is putting them in positions to win. The Tennessee and the Carolina games, it's like he put this team in a position to win. Like, he's finally putting them and winning games because of Carson Wentz. Ultimately, they don't go out and win those games, but he's finally culminated to become this quarterback that you win games because of. And it's like, if the other guys around him do their job, they win last night's game without a doubt. If the defense makes a 4th and 3 stop, game's over. Carson Wentz has a game-winning drive under his belt.
If Nelson Aguilar catches the ball, right? Did he? I'm almost positive Carson Wentz called that audible.
Dude, how he just rose up to the occasion and finally just, I think he has arguably some of the most pressure, as much as I don't want to admit it, as much as players don't want to admit it, and I'm sure as much as Carson doesn't want to admit it, has some of the greatest pressure buildup of any player in the NFL at this current point in time. And seeing how he reacted to that touchdown yesterday, when he just, like, he was ready to run off the field after he snuck it in. He's like, man, like, we finally did this. And he's like, I you could see that it meant so much to him. And it was like,
exactly,
this is his team. And how the team spoke about him after the game, and the quotes that were coming out, guys saying that although they didn't win, and although it wasn't Carson's best performance, just how he gutted it out, and he took big hits from the beginning. You knew from that time he took that hit in his ribs that he wasn't himself. You knew he was hurting, and he did everything he could to put that team in position to win. And the throws he was making, the one that just his knee didn't touch, it just doesn't make sense. Like, the things he does, it's just unbelievable, and it's one game after another. And yesterday was just the ultimate culmination of a franchise quarterback, and he did everything in his power to win that game. And if Zach Ertz runs an 8.1-yard route instead of an 8-yard route, they have a position to have two more throws to win that game, and I would have loved to see one more set of downs for Carson, but hey, it's just not the way a cookie crumbles. But in my opinion, like you said, Lou, I am beyond impressed of the performance that Carson Wentz put on in that second half yesterday. He's a winner in my book.
Yesterday, that performance is the reason you trade up for a guy like that. It is
without
the reason you pay a guy $100+ million guaranteed, and Carson Wentz is a player that is worth all of that. A guy like Jared Goff, to me, could not have done last night with what the scenario, with all the pressure that Atlanta was giving Carson Wentz, not only the defense itself, the defensive front, but the atmosphere. I mean, look, it wasn't a playoff game, but I'm convinced now that in a playoff atmosphere, Carson Wentz can step up to the plate, because yesterday was very, I was getting playoff vibes, you know, and it's probably just because every time they play this damn Atlanta Falcons team, it comes down to the wire, right? I mean, I can't, my emotional health can't do any more of these finishes with Atlanta, but that was the other thing I'm very encouraged of walking away, was that was as playoff-like of an environment you will get in a regular season game. And the spike, I'm glad you brought that up, because you could see how much that meant to him, that this was a moment he has been waiting for the past 2 years to show, I can do this with this team just like Nick Foles could, like I said earlier. And the only other moment we really, really saw that where they got it done was against the Rams, the game that he got injured because he put his body on the line to make sure the Eagles got home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So, yeah, look, I think if you're anything more than over the moon about what we saw from Carson Wentz yesterday, then I don't really know what to tell you. I thought it was the, at least in my book, I thought it was the top moment of his career so far, and it's just very frustrating that it comes in a loss once again, because like you said, he has found a way, you know, more and more, 2016, 2017, 2018, now 2019, he has gotten better and better late in games, right? And yesterday, I think, was the pinnacle of that for sure. But a lot of it had to do with, too, the defense really kept them in this football game, Gino, but that 4th-and-3 to Julio Jones. Look, a lot of people are getting on Jim Schwartz now for the blitz. I can't, for the sake of not becoming a hypocrite, I was calling all game, and for a couple years now, to have Jim Schwartz be better situationally, and he was yesterday. He was dialing up the blitzes, using a lot of cover zero, and when you're living by the blitz in that game, you're probably going to die by the blitz, too. You might have liked at least a couple guys deep in the backfield, but I don't know, man. I can't really fault for Jim Schwartz really going for it as he did all game on that 4th-and-3 where, I mean, great blocks by Sanu and Jake Matthews, and of course, then Julio's off to the races. He wasn't going to be denied 3 games in a row.
Jim Schwartz and what he did yesterday and what he has done throughout his tenure in Philadelphia just reminds me of, did you ever watch The Office, Lou? I'm sure you've
biggest fan you'll find.
Okay, you know the episode when Jim takes the pen, and every time he clicks the pen, he would give Dwight, he would give him a mint.
Yeah, then they start using computer jingles. The pen,
and he doesn't give him a mint. It's like Jim Schwartz, it's like, oh, he draws up a blitz, gets a sack, boom, loves it. Draws up a blitz, gets an interception, okay, loves it. Situationally, 4th-and-3, oh, we're going to draw up a blitz here and leave zero coverage against Julio Jones. Oh, let's do it again. It's like, you can't get in those habits, and that's the thing with him, is he just gets so set in his ways, one way or the other. It's like he either plays his corners off so much, or then he just puts them up at the line too much. He just, situationally, Jim Schwartz is so questionable. His performance yesterday in play calling, I will give him the hats off, but when it mattered the most, he just crumbled. It just, last year against Carolina, last year against Tennessee, yesterday, how many of these situational moments can Jim Schwartz crumble under until we're like, Jim, hey, maybe you should kind of change up your play calling late in games to not make it so obvious what you're going to do. In those 2 games last year where they let up those huge fourth quarter leads, they just played sticks coverage and just let them beat them underneath every single time. And they knew that, and they just worked their way to eventually being in a position where they beat the Eagles, both the Titans and Carolina. And then last night, they're like, okay, Matt Ryan, he saw it. As soon as he went up to the line and he saw zero cover, zero safeties, he's like, yeah, I'm going on this screen to Julio Jones where I'm just going to take it to the house. It was one of the easiest checks that Matt Ryan will have in the entire history of the NFL, because even I saw it. I was like, okay, this is not a situation where you want to be playing Rasul Douglas with no help behind you, because you saw it last week with Terry McLaurin. Bad things can happen if you play with no covered safeties and you have guys up at the line of scrimmage. Bad things can happen. We saw it yesterday. Just situationally, Jim Schwartz drives me absolutely bananas. But like you said, Lou, I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite, because I wanted them to blitz, and it did work when it needed to, but situationally, you can't sit there and be like, okay, 4th-and-3. We know that's shot territory in any game. Like, any team could be smart and just take a shot because the team's thinking, okay, they're going to live to fight another day, get the 3 yards, much like the Eagles did yesterday, and they got burned by it. It's just one of those things that he has to get better situationally. And we say it or season after season after season. It's like, when is this going to happen? Come on, Jim. Like, let's get it together.
Yeah, I'm not saying, again, you are right. It's just really hard for me to sit here and criticize him because every time there's a game-winning drive, right, where all they got to do is get in field goal range and Schwartz has his corner still lining 10 yards off the ball, I'm freaking out. So that's why, like, you are right. Like, in that 4th-and-3, you have to know, all right, just because we've been dialing up the blitz doesn't mean now that's all we're going to do. I get that. Like, it's either black is black or white is white. There's no ever in between with Schwartz, and I do get that part. I just don't want to get too into it for me just because it's like I've been calling for that to be part of the game plan for a while. But you are right, and you know what's incredible, though, was Julio Jones was not going to be denied there. Look, the ball went through his hands in the divisional round in 2017. Last year, he catches the ball in the end zone as time expires, but Ronald Darby hits him out of bounds. This time, he finally does get that game winner against the Eagles. It almost didn't matter, though, Gino, because let's get into that final drive here before we take a break. That Nelson Aguilar drop, he says he lost it in the lights, but that you cannot throw a better ball if you're Carson Wentz in stride, and all there was in front of Nelson Aguilar was green grass. That would have been a touchdown, and the Julio Jones touchdown wouldn't have meant anything. I mean, that's the play. It's very similar to the Titans game last year where you're going to be thinking about this game a lot this year, especially depending on what happens in the standings.
You couldn't have put that ball on a baseball tee and had Nelson Aguilar run full speed at it and just put his arms out and tried to get it off the tee better than Carson Wentz placed it into his hands. That was the ultimate epitome of who Nelson Aguilar is as a player, in my opinion. And the Scouting Academy has me under this paradigm that I look at what players can do, and it's a very, like, it's a tough two-bladed sword to fight because at times it's like, yes, you want to look at Nelson Aguilar, what he can do as a third receiver, what he can do yards after catch, what he can do getting separation. But then under the same caveat, in the games where he has been having to step into these roles as the number one receiver, much like he had to do early in his career or early in the season last year, and then early on in his career after the Eagles moved on from Nelson or from DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin, he just hasn't been able to step up in those big moments. Like, yes, he had a great stat line yesterday. Yes, he had a good stat line early in the season yesterday. But when has this team won a game because of what Nelson Aguilar has done?
Well, I think 2016 Nelson Aguilar came back in the worst possible time. In fairness, though, I will say, I have actually been impressed. You are right, like, when he has to step up on the outside, when he has to be the number one wide receiver, when there's injuries, and when he actually has to do that, he is not coming up big. But I don't know. I am remembering the Texans game last year where he caught that touchdown in the fourth quarter. He did have two touchdowns against the Redskins week 17. I mean, he had 9 catches in the Super Bowl. Even last night, like, be it as it may, look, that was an Alshon Jeffrey against the Saints kind of moment. But, I mean, that 4th-and-14, like, he makes that catch to keep the game alive. He did come up with a big third down conversion in the fourth quarter. He caught the touchdown. But that's what's frustrating for me is, like, then he comes up with that moment. It's like, why is number 17 Aguilar back?
You can't be inconsistent in making $9.4 million. A year.
Yeah, I know. It's just I just disagree. I think Aguilar has been bigger in some moments, but look, that was 2016 Aguilar all over again on that play.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not gonna say the game was all on him. Like, yes, he did have a chance to win it, but it doesn't come down to one play. There were plenty of other plays. Like, Zach Ertz, as being an All-Pro, should know to run that route literally a foot more than what he did.
And also, why didn't he extend the ball out farther?
I think that was a safety or linebacker.
Oh, he maybe didn't want to fumble it? Yeah, that's true. That play was almost as frustrating, because then you're on, what, like the 6-yard line, and you still had like 40 seconds left.
Yeah, you just can't, you can't blame it all on Nelson, but at the same time, like, you have a chance to step up there. Like, you've performed up and down all game. Like, that's not the only drop he had throughout the game.
There were two plays, one in the end zone where the ball was a little high, but he should have brought it down. And then there was another play on third down where there are times where Aguilar, it's a tough catch, but he doesn't bring it in. You're like, you got to make that play for your quarterback. It was kind of 3-and-3. He made 3 plays he really should have, making Wentz look good. And then there were 3 times where you're like, man, just put it all together. So I do get your point with the inconsistencies for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to look at him, and then on the other side of the ball, under the same lens, look at Ronald Darby.
No, I'm not even going to be starting.
He's getting paid good money as well, and he is yet to do anything that has proven me otherwise, that he should be a number one corner. It's like, it's the same thing with Nelson Agholor. Like, he has a drop, and then he goes out and makes that fourth down catch. Ronald Darby just stinks all game, and then has an interception that's just right into his hands. It yesterday made no sense. But Ronald Darby, he's clearly not himself. Get him off the field. Like, I tweeted it yesterday, and I'm pretty sure you liked it, Lou. It's like, we had the Bradley Fletcher game, we've had the Leotis McKelvin game, we've had the Byron Maxwell game, we had the Eric Rowe game, and yesterday was the Ronald Darby game. They were picking on him, and with a team that has an elite wide receiving core, you can't let him go out there and get bullied like he did yesterday. You had Rasul Douglas, who was playing well. You had Sidney Jones, who was playing well. And you had Avante Maddox healthy, who was playing well as well. Get him off the field. Like, you can't just put him out there for the sake of calling him CB1. Like, if the guy's not healthy, especially against that receiving core, get him off the field.
It's not just that he wasn't healthy. He's not that good.
No, definitely. Like, that's another part of it for sure.
I went back and rewatched a lot of it because I wanted to make sure I wasn't being too hard on him. And almost every big play I saw from Calvin Ridley or Julio Jones yesterday was going on the right side of the field towards Ronald Darby. And my biggest frustration was you were rotating the corners on the other side. I thought Sidney Jones was having the best game of his career. I thought Rasul Douglas yesterday had a really good game. Outside of the odd angle that he took on that final play, he really stepped up. He played really physical with Julio Jones. He made a couple great plays on the ball, some big tackles too, against the run and in screen passes. Those two are coming back and forth onto the field. Meanwhile, like you said, you're having a career-low game by Ronald Darby on that other side. He says he was healthy. So for me, yes, he has that interception. Outside of that, it was one of the worst performances I've seen from a corner. Like you said, I mean, it's Byron Maxwell against Atlanta on Monday Night Football in 2015. It's Bradley Fletcher on Sunday Night Football in 2014 against Dez Bryant and the Dallas Cowboys. It's Leotis McKelvin against literally anybody in 2016. Yeah, like you said, Eric Rowe against the Detroit Lions on Thanksgiving 2015. And Jim Schwartz did not put Darby as a part of that rotation. And it's the accountability of why this guy has gotten the benefit of the doubt now for two straight years. He has not had to earn anything. He has been traded to the Eagles.
And he's never been held accountable.
Yep.
Like Jim Schwartz does not hold his cornerbacks accountable. He does it with Mills and he does it with Darby. And
I was going to say, it's those two.
Absolutely, incredibly pissing me off more than it has ever. Because yesterday, I can't even enjoy the fact that Sidney Jones had arguably one of the best games of his career. Because we're sitting here yelling about these stupid inconsistencies that Ronald Darby and Nelson Agholor have. Let Sidney Jones go out there and play. He had a great game. When there was a one-on-one tackle, I had no doubt that it was going to be made if it was in the open field from Sidney Jones. When Ronald Darby went to tackle, oh my gosh. Lou, he can't tackle anybody.
He missed at least another five tackles yesterday.
He cannot tackle.
And if the positive is supposed to be that he's great in coverage, yesterday, the past two games, he has not been good in coverage either. He allowed two touchdowns yesterday, and I don't know if Sendejo was supposed to get over the top on that Ridley play, but regardless, Darby was right there. And like you said, there is accountability when it comes to the younger guys, but then for some reason, when it's Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby, they get a complete pass. And it's been like this for 2 years now, where Darby gets traded to the Eagles, and he walks into a starting job. He gets hurt, Rasul Douglas looks good, Darby walks back into the starting job. Then he gets hurt again last year after being bad, walks back into the job this year, and now he was terrible in a game while you're rotating the corners on the other side, and you make sure he is not a part of that rotation. You guys know I'm beating a dead horse here, but that horse continues to be a liability on the field for the Eagles. And like you said, Sidney Jones is ripping through multiple blockers, bringing guys down all game long. He had an interception. Him and Rasul Douglas, they stepped up in this street brawl that was the Sunday Night Football
game. And Rodney McLeod.
Yes, I loved Rodney McLeod's performance. And When these two teams are just exchanging blow for blow, the two guys that were swinging the most seemingly were Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones. Meanwhile, Ronald Darby was having the worst game of his career, and he saw the field the entire game. So that's the thing with Jim Schwartz. I'm going to give him credit for the blitz and adjusting in that scenario, but the cornerback position, he continues to botch how he handles this rotation and how he makes guys accountable or doesn't.
It's one of those things that is just going to be in the Jim Schwartz realm of I will not change because I am Jim Schwartz, that we get mad at time and time again. He'll play sticks coverage until the cows come home. He'll continue to blitz when he wants to. He'll continue to not blitz when he wants to. It's Jim Schwartz. It's something we have to deal with. But to sit there and watch Ronald Darby just get bested time and time again, and it wasn't by the same receiver. It was by the entire receiving corps.
That's right, exactly.
It was everybody. There was a play against Austin Hooper. He gets lost in coverage. It was against everybody. And the reason Atlanta won that game yesterday came down to a single play, came down to an adjustment that Matt Ryan made on 4th and 3 and looked at his offense and looked at our defense and realized, hey, he's just running the same play he ran the last time. They're going to blitz us again. They have no safeties to cover over the top. Let's run an audible and get this play that we know can bang here and go for 6. And they did exactly that. When Jim Schwartz was pressed with having to take accountability and make adjustments, he didn't do it. And that's ultimately what yesterday's game came down to. And yes, the defense may have kept him in the game, but I just saw some analytical stuff here that if you look at their EPA, that's efficiency ratings, the Eagles' defense is operating well under the average of efficiency ratings, while their offense is operating well above the average of efficiency ratings. And you know I love stuff like that. So if the numbers are there, the performance is there, if it smells like a duck, quacks like a duck, acts like a duck, it's a duck. Jim Schwartz, stop being a duck and put together a full game. Like, you had the pieces there. Sidney Jones played great. Rodney McLeod played great. Like, and then you go and put Rodney McLeod in single coverage against Julio Jones. Like, there were so many mind-boggling things that Jim Schwartz did. It was just, it's so maddening, Lou. It just doesn't change. And I feel like we've had the same discussion at least 15 times on this podcast, and it just does not change.
It really doesn't, and I think the face of all of that right now is Ronald Darby. And, you know, I thought the defense did have a good game, but like we've said, I mean, I think a lot of the theme of last week, even in that win against the Redskins, was situational football, and not just for Jim Schwartz and the defense, but the offense as well, because late in the games, Jim Schwartz is, I mean, like yesterday and a lot in 2018, they've kind of screwed the pooch, while the offense has been the opposite in late in games, but can't seem to get it together in the first half, and that kind of was very similar yesterday. We got to take one more break here. When we come back, we'll wrap up this edition of Locked On Eagles as we are recapping the 24-20 loss to the Falcons. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is sponsored by Blue Chew. Guys, this isn't just for all of you out there who can't perform. It's for anyone who wants that extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Listen up. It's Blue Chew. Blue like the color blue. It's prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so there's no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, none of that awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our Locked On Eagles listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's B-L-U-E, BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it for free. BlueChew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the Locked On Eagles podcast today.
All right, everybody, we are back. Welcome in. It's the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. We are wrapping up this Monday edition of the show. The Eagles falling last night in Atlanta to the Falcons 24-20. Gino, we got into some of the things they got to correct. We got into the injury scares that we still don't have a lot of updates. We have the update on Timmy Jernigan that he's out 4 to 6 weeks. We don't know the severity yet of Alshon Jeffery's injury.
Or do we?
Please tell me it's
as
not serious.
As of 8 minutes ago. Ian Rapoport, Eagles wide receiver Alshon Jeffery is dealing with a calf strain, source said, following Sunday Night Football. It is not major, but with 2 games in 10 days, the timing is bad. His status for those games is in some doubt. Makes me feel like they will rest him until next Thursday against the Packers, because if any time to play Detroit Lions and play at home, next week is the game after the game that they had yesterday, and I'm resting Alshon until they go to Lambeau, because I told you before the season started that game scares the ever-living hell out of me, having to travel up there, because the Eagles have been beat there pretty badly a couple times in my fandom as an Eagles fan, and they really need to put together a good performance against the Packers, who really are going to be one of those teams that they're battling with for one of the 6 seeds in the playoffs, in my opinion.
Okay, so there you have it. Alshon Jeffery could most likely, like you said, will be out against Detroit this Sunday, but then hopefully against the Packers on Thursday Night Football. That's great news, though. I mean, you can't lose Alshon Jeffery for a long period of time. And then nothing with DeSean Jackson still, right?
Nope, we have nothing on him. But yeah, like you said, people were saying that he was walking around practice good. I think I read somewhere that he had that injury last week after the Redskins game, but it was never reported. He said he felt some tightness. I'm not sure who reported that, but I did read that somewhere. So I'm guessing that's one of those precautionary things. Once everybody started to go down, I think they really kind of pulled the plug and was like, if we can just get these guys healthy, it's week two. Like, that's the way we're looking at this. It is overreaction Monday. People are going to overreact, but it is week two. We finished the last two seasons 1-1. We have yet to win a week two under Doug Peterson. Times aren't changing. Oh, actually, we did the first time around. Sorry about that. But since he's been on the trail to the Super Bowl, we have not won a week two. So things aren't terrible yet. We're 1-1. When we won the Super Bowl, we were 1-1. There's always a good way to put a spin on things.
Yeah, look, the loss stinks. They were in it. And I think that's what makes it harder, is that you thought the game was really over from the start, and then they end up taking a lead, which is what makes today painful and what is going to make this entire week painful, because you almost stole a game. And again, one of the toughest environments. I mean, hats off to that. That dome was loud. That defense came to play. They were motivated. The Falcons were embarrassed last week with that loss against Minnesota, and they've been coming for blood, because the Eagles have handed them two devastating losses in back-to-back years, so that game meant a lot to them. But yeah, a positive spin on this is that the Eagles were actually in that football game yesterday despite all the injuries, and also they're getting out of this game, which was an absolute bloodbath, with seemingly only one serious injury. And that has to do with defensive tackle Timmy Jernigan, who's out 4 to 6 weeks. And that is a big loss. But, hey, if you can get DeSean Jackson maybe out only a week, two, or maybe he does come back this week. If he doesn't, maybe they rest him during practice and he is back against Detroit. But if you can get everybody out of this one with only missing a game or two, or maybe none at all, that is really big-time news. So thanks, everyone, for tuning into today's edition of Locked On Eagles. We got a piece out of here, but hey, we got 4 to 5 more podcasts this week, so make sure you subscribe to the show on whatever podcast provider you listen to me and Gino, or you can check it out on LockedOnEagles.com. For my co-host, Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase signing off. Follow us on Twitter at LockedOnBirds, at DiBiaseLOE, and at Gino_LOE. We'll be back tomorrow for another one. As always, thank you for downloading, thank you for listening, and let's go Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.